Real quick, we have to take a break to acknowledge the sponsor of today's episode, which is Secret Nature. Secret Nature's ultra premium CBD gummies are crafted with real botanicals, nothing extra, and designed to fit right into your day with clean, purposeful functionality. So for me personally, I like to take one of their snoozer gummies in the evening to unwind and ensure that I get a good night's sleep. After a long day, especially when my brain is just still running a mile a minute and I can't seem to settle down, I'll take one to help me slow down, unplug, and actually get a good night's sleep. I personally don't drink alcohol because I just don't like the way it makes me feel the next day, but these gummies feel very clean, intentional, and it never leaves me groggy the next morning, just feeling balanced and rested. Secret Nature's gummies are organic and farm grown. They're never lab made. They're ultra premium CBD gummies made with real botanicals and nothing extra. You've got two purpose built options. There's Bliss for clear focus and productive flow if you want to take one during the day, and then you get Snoozers to help you relax and rest at the end of the day. Each gummy has consistent, measured CBD, so there's never any guessing, just clean, reliable functionality that fits naturally into your schedule. Get 30% off your first order at secretnature.com with the code MAMA. That's M-A-M-A. And just a heads up, their Black Friday sale is coming up, and they are going to be offering 25% off on orders of $75 or more, 35% off on orders of $125 or more, and then 40% off on orders of $150 or more between November 26th and the 30th. So don't forget to use my code MAMA when you check out. That's M-A-M-A at secretnature.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever find yourself playing the budgeting game? Well, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive, you can find options that fit your budget and potentially lower your bills. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Not available in all states.
Hi, welcome to IKEA.
This is my college campus.
Correct, but I see you're on IKEA.com ordering some college items.
My daughter's room is pretty bare. We need a lamp, some comfy pillows, her favorite stuffy.
Dad!
With pickup options, we've got what you need to conveniently order IKEA. Literally anywhere.
Sweet, more time for gaming.
And studying. Wait, where are you going now?
Got to show the ultimate. Get IKEA whenever, wherever, however you want. Choose from thousands of pickup locations, affordable delivery options, and more.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/Spotify.
Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly.
And I am your co-host, Austin.
I'm so happy to have you back on the podcast, Austin. Our last episode was on Maddie Russo. And if you listened to that, I'm sure you were infuriated with me. You probably should have been on that episode because it was just so wild. It was about this girl in college who was faking having pancreatic cancer.
Oh,
and she went on with this lie for a really long time, made almost like $40,000 in donations. And that's where the actual crime occurred, was receiving these donations based on this lie that she was telling everyone. But it was so crazy. If you haven't already listened to it, you got to go listen to it. But
I feel like everyone knows that that person, everybody had somebody they went to school with that faked cancer or something.
That's literally what I said at the very beginning. Like, we're so in sync.
Yeah.
But I literally, in the beginning of the episode, said everyone has come across somebody like this in their life.
Yeah.
The person who lied just to lie or lied just to get attention. I knew a girl that lied all the time, lied about her parents having money, lied about one time she came to school with a quote unquote black eye. And it was so obvious that she had just smudged eyeliner like all around her eye.
Like,
but
why?
She said that she got hit with a softball. And I think she just wanted to be perceived as like, oh, she's so tough. She's so cool. She plays softball.
It's weird how people want attention.
So
it's strange.
It's so weird. And it's weird too that people will lie so much about these big things like having a baby or having
people
cancer.
Lie about pregnancy. That's weird.
That is so weird.
Yeah.
I don't
issues.
Get it.
Yeah. Liars be lying.
Liars be lying about shit.
So this current episode that we're about to start is actually one that's been highly requested. So we're going to get into it. If you're new here, thank you for joining us. If you're returning, we appreciate your support. Today, we're covering a case that has captured a lot of attention over the past couple years, but especially this year, all over TikTok. And it's one that brings together horrific violence and then strangely this disturbing fascination with the killer himself. So we're talking today about Wade Wilson, the man who was dubbed the Deadpool Killer because of his name's eerie similarity to the Marvel antihero, which I've never actually seen any of those.
I'm not into those movies, so I haven't seen them either.
Yeah, so I don't know if like he's naming himself after a really bad guy or I don't know. But anyway, unlike the fictional character known for this chaotic sense of humor and exaggerated comic book violence, the real Wade Wilson's actions were dark and calculated and really devastating. Two women, Christine Melton and Diane Ruiz, lost their lives at his hands in October of 2019. And these murders sent shockwaves through the tight-knit communities of Cape Coral and Fort Myers, Florida. So throughout this episode, we're going to walk you through Wade Wilson's life from his troubled childhood to his shocking crimes, and then eventually his conviction and ultimate death sentence. Nice. Now, this case is more about just one man's violent acts. It's a deep dive into mental health struggles, substance abuse, and a justice system that at times seemed unable to catch up with him until it was really just too late. So without further delay, let's jump into the story of Wade Wilson. Wade Wilson was born on May 20th, 1994, under less than ideal circumstances. His biological parents, Stephen Testa, and a mother whose name is largely unknown due to her troubled history, were barely teenagers when they found out that they were pregnant. His mother was only 13 and his father was 14. So from the very start...
13 and 14.
Yes.
Holy Toledo.
Yes. So from the start, Wade's life was shaped by instability. Both parents struggled with their own issues. His mother is believed to have suffered from mental health problems, potentially worsened by substance abuse. And recognizing their inability to raise a child, Wade's biological parents decided to put him up for adoption. And this is where Cindy and Steve Wilson now enter the story. They were a lovely couple from Tallahassee, Florida.
Can you imagine having a kid at 13 years old?
No, I don't even think I had kissed a boy yet. At 13
years old. That's mind blowing.
It is.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
So they gave him up for adoption and he was given to this couple out of Tallahassee, Florida, Cindy and Steve, and they had always wanted children. The Wilsons were known for their generosity and their strong faith. They attended the same church as Wade's biological grandparents, which is likely how they became connected to this case. But soon after Wade was born, Cindy and Steve adopted him, and he officially became a part of their family. Now, by all accounts, Wade's early years with the Wilsons seemed relatively normal. They provided him with a stable, middle-class home. Cindy and Steve also had two daughters, so Wade grew up with siblings. They had greyhound dogs as pets and all the privileges of a suburban upbringing. He attended Deer Lake Middle School and later went to Lawton Childs, I don't know if I'm saying that right, high school in Tallahassee. Now, from the outside, Wade appeared like any other kid. He was active in sports, he went to church with his family, and he did fairly well in school. However, as he grew older, the cracks began to show. By the time Wade turned 13, his behavior took a drastic turn. His once innocent childhood was overshadowed by the onset of mental health issues. He became increasingly reclusive and paranoid. He was moody and erratic, and he was acting out at school, frequently causing disruptions and clashing with authority figures. And friends and family noticed the change, and while they were concerned, it wasn't immediately clear how severe the situation would ultimately become. And I have to kind of wonder if they were like, oh, he's just going through hormonal changes. He's just a teenage boy being a boy. But no, it was very much more deep-rooted than that. Mm-hmm. His parents were deeply worried about the sudden shift in his behavior. And in Florida, there's a law called the Baker Act, which allows for emergency mental health services for individuals who are in crisis and unable to make sound decisions about their well-being. So at just 15 years old, Wade's parents invoked this act to get him some help, which placed him in a 72-hour psychiatric hold for evaluation. While under this temporary detainment, doctors tried to assess his mental state and determine the next steps, including whether further treatment or medication was necessary. Though his parents hoped that the intervention would lead to improvement, it only caused the problems to get so much worse. He refused to participate in most forms of therapy. He resisted any mental health care. And alongside his increasingly erratic behavior, Wade began experimenting with drugs, which only compounded his issues. He was known to smoke marijuana before school, often disappearing into the woods with friends to get high. And classmates described him as a troubled kid who seemed to have no respect for authority and preferred to hang out with the so-called rebels of the school. This pattern of behavior continued into his teenage years, and his involvement in drugs deepened. His time in high school was cut short when he was expelled for smoking weed in a school bathroom and setting a toilet paper roll on fire by accident in the process.
Oh my gosh, by accident. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine being in the bathroom at school, smoking weed, accidentally catch the toilet paper roll on fire? You're late for class. You're stoned.
It's not funny. I'm laughing, but it's so stupid.
Well, sitting here talking about it like this is kind of funny.
Yeah, it's just so stupid. Yeah. But you went to school with some idiots too, though.
Oh, yeah. I think we all did.
Yeah. We definitely all did. I don't remember.
You went to school with some morons also. You care to share?
Yeah.
What was that supposed to be?
You
want
to share a story? Because you've told me so many stories, but I don't remember any kind of stories like this from my high school. But like, we didn't have people that really acted like this. I mean, they were idiots, but like maybe I just didn't know what was going on.
How many people were in your class?
500.
Yeah, I had 490 or something. So you had idiots. You're not telling me all 500 people were not idiots?
I went to a really good school. I mean, nobody was smoking weed or like.
No, I think you were just too naive. I think that was definitely
but
happening.
But it seems like a commonality now, but I'm also older than you. So maybe back in my day.
Yeah, shit's more common now.
People you are a cougar. Crazy.
You're a cougar. Keep going.
No, I've heard though of like kids in high school doing drugs in the schools, like even as early as middle school, kids are doing this nowadays. Like that's just a separate topic for a separate day, but it is crazy how much younger kids are getting
everything.
Yeah. Drugs, sex. It's scary.
And rock and roll isn't the thing of the past.
Stop.
It's drugs, sex, and hip hop.
I don't know.
Everybody's listening. I mean, that's what they do, right? I mean, rock and roll's not that popular anymore. Let's keep going.
Oh, I see what you're... Okay. Well, anyway, Wade's mental health struggles were also worsened by several head injuries that he sustained from playing sports. And these concussions likely played a role in his erratic and impulsive behavior, though it would take years for anyone to actually make that connection, which now I feel like CTE is so commonly known that it's almost an excuse for any athlete's poor behavior. But anyway... Despite the efforts of his parents and the brief psychiatric intervention, Wade's downward spiral seemed inevitable. And by the time he reached adulthood, his life was already on a dangerous trajectory. At 18, Wade made an important decision that would shape his future. He reconnected with his biological father, Stephen. While Wade hadn't had much contact with him growing up, as an adult, he was curious about where he came from and wanted to explore a relationship with his birth father. The two started talking regularly, though their relationship remained somewhat distant. Stephen lived in Lakeland, Florida, which was a few hours away from Wade, so most of their contact was just through phone calls and text messages. Wade's newfound connection with his father didn't lead to any noticeable improvements in his life, though. If anything, it coincided with his growing entanglement in criminal activity. Wade had already begun building a criminal record, with his first major run-in with the law happening in 2012. He was arrested for burglary and gun charges, serving just over a year in prison from September 2013 to November of 2014. And this marked the beginning of a pattern of behavior that would soon escalate beyond just petty theft and drugs. Wade's teenage years had been turbulent, but his early 20s would prove to be far more dangerous. By the time Wade Wilson entered his 20s, his life had spiraled into a cycle of drug abuse and crime. His early arrests, which started when he was just 18, were only the beginning. Wade's behavior grew increasingly erratic and violent as he struggled to keep any semblance of a stable life. And after serving a year in prison for burglary and gun charges, Wade's encounters with the law became more frequent and severe. One of Wade's most shocking arrests came just a month after his release from prison in late 2014. He was at a party in Tallahassee, Florida, and met a woman through mutual friends. And after they decided to smoke together in her car, the situation took a terrifying turn. And this, I feel like, is some foreshadowing. But Wade forced the woman into the back seat, covered her with jackets, and began driving aimlessly before parking the car. And then over the course of the next 3 hours, Wade choked, raped, and physically assaulted her while filming parts of that attack on her phone. Now, at one point, Wade threatened the woman with death, telling her that she had two options, do what he said or get shot. And when he finally stopped the attack, Wade forced the woman to return to the party with him and made her sit on his lap while sexually assaulting her in front of other partygoers as they drove around. Eventually, she was dropped off at her brother's house, where she immediately reported the attack to the police. Now, despite the evidence, including a rape kit, video recordings, and testimony, Wade was shockingly acquitted by a jury. Now, this marked yet another instance where Wade just evaded justice despite clear indications of his violent tendencies. Now, in 2015, after his acquittal, Wade continued his life of crime. He found himself back in trouble with the law after being implicated in a murder-for-hire plot connected to Denise Williams, a woman who was convicted of orchestrating the murder of her husband, Mike Williams. Though Wade wasn't formally charged, his name came up during trial testimony when Brian Winchester, the man involved with Denise, claimed that Wade had offered to murder Denise as well to eliminate any loose ends. So he clearly just has a complete disregard for human life.
Mm-hmm.
Over the next few years, Wade continued to spiral. His relationships with women were marked by violent outbursts and erratic behavior. In 2019, one of his ex-girlfriends accused him of stealing her laptop and gun, leading to another arrest. Then in February of that same year, Wade was accused of kidnapping and raping the same woman. She reported that Wade beat and strangled her during the attack, but police, for whatever reason, did not pursue charges because they said there was a lack of evidence.
How is this dude still out walking? Lack of evidence or not, he's been accused of beating chicks, of raping chicks, burglary. Like, what is going on?
Being involved with a murder for hire.
Drugs.
Like, at some point.
A murder for hire, yeah.
Yeah. At some point, if he walks like a duck and he talks like a duck,
it's probably a duck.
It's probably a duck. We should probably take these things seriously.
Gosh.
But these missed opportunities to hold Wade accountable would prove fatal for two women later that year. As the year progressed, Wade's behavior grew even more dangerous. His drug use worsened and he became involved with more women who would later report abuse. Yet despite these accusations, he seemed untouchable, just slipping through the cracks of the legal system again and again. But by October 2019, Wade's downward spiral would reach its deadly climax. Christine Melton was born on May 31st of 1984, and she was a beloved sister, daughter, and friend. She was known for her infectious sense of humor and unwavering loyalty to those that she loved. Christine had moved to Cape Coral, Florida, to be closer to her mother, who was suffering from Alzheimer's disease, and she lived just four houses down from her. Christine worked as a bartender at a local spot called Duffy's and had a reputation for being fun, adventurous, and spontaneous. On the night of October 6th of 2019, Christine and her friend Stephanie decided to head out to Buddha Live, which is a bar in Fort Myers known for its live music. It was supposed to be a fun night out, a chance to unwind and just listen to some local bands. The two friends had known each other since high school and had always been close, so nights like these were common for them. That evening, the night took a fateful turn when they met Wade Wilson. Wade introduced himself as JR to both women, a tactic he often used to conceal his true identity. Stephanie and Christine were immediately charmed by Wade's confidence and charisma. They all hit it off, and when the bar closed at 2 a.m., Wade suggested that they continue the party elsewhere. So Stephanie, Christine, Wade, and another man named Jason left the bar together and headed back to Jason's house. At Jason's home, the group continued drinking and using drugs, specifically cocaine and marijuana. It was clear to everyone that Wade and Christine had an immediate attraction to one another, and the two eventually became intimate while others were hanging out in another part of the house. After a few hours, Stephanie decided it was time to leave. She had to work the next morning and then also needed to take her child to school. So Christine assured her that everything was fine and she seemed comfortable being left alone with Wade. But the next morning, October 7th, Christine was dead. Sometime after Stephanie left, Wade strangled Christine to death in her own apartment. He used her clothing to tie her up and then left her body where it fell. Wade, who had taken a liking to Christine's car, decided to steal it and flee the scene. Stephanie, having no idea what had transpired after she left, went about her day as usual. She texted Christine around 10 a.m. checking in, but received no response. And at first, she thought Christine was just sleeping in after their late night out. But as the day progressed and Christine still hadn't responded, Stephanie's concern grew. When her calls went straight to voicemail, she decided to call Christine's cousin, Samantha, who also hadn't heard from her. Later that day, Stephanie received a call that would change everything. A detective from the Cape Coral Police Department contacted her, asking if she knew why Christine's car had been found abandoned. Alarm bells immediately started going off. Stephanie rushed to Christine's apartment with Samantha and other friends, only to find it surrounded by police tape. Authorities soon confirmed what they had feared. Christine had been murdered. Just hours after Christine's murder, Wade Wilson was already hunting for his next victim, and his next target would be 43-year-old Diane Ruiz. Diane was well-known and loved in the community, not only for her bubbly personality, but also for her devotion to her two children. She worked as a bartender at the Moose Lodge, and her coworkers described her as the heartbeat of the establishment. She was engaged to Scott Hannon, and the two lived together with Diane's children, creating a happy and normal life for themselves. On the morning of October 7th, 2019, Diane was walking to work, and normally she would have a ride, but her usual ride just wasn't available that day. So since the Moose Lodge was only about a 15-minute walk from her home, Diane decided to go on foot. However, she never made it. As Diane walked, Wade spotted her and pulled over. Pretending to need directions, he convinced her to get in the car with him. Once she was inside, Wade overpowered Diane, strangling her in the car as he drove aimlessly around town. Eventually, Wade pulled into the parking lot of a Sam's Club, where he dumped her body behind the store. But when he realized that Diane was still breathing, Wade coldly got back in the car and ran over her body multiple times. And then drove away. Diane's coworkers were immediately concerned when she didn't show up for her shift. She hadn't missed a day of work in 5 years, and the fact that she didn't call in to explain her absence was a red flag. When police arrived at Diane's home that morning, her son answered the door. He was horrified to see an officer standing there holding Diane's purse, which had been found in the street near the elementary school where she would have passed on her way to work. A missing persons report was filed and police quickly began canvassing the area. 3 days later, on October 10th, Diane's body was discovered in the Sam's Club parking lot. She had been badly beaten, her body was covered in bruises, and her nose and ears were partially removed due to the exposure to the elements and wildlife in the days since her death. Now, as soon as Christine Melton's body was discovered in her apartment, the investigation kicked into high gear. The Cape Coral Police Department immediately began questioning those who had been with Christine the night before, starting with her friend Stephanie, who had been the last person to see her alive aside from Wade. Stephanie told police everything she knew about the events of that night, including all the details she knew about the man she knew as JR. With this information, Wade quickly became the prime suspect. The discovery of Christine's body, along with the knowledge that Wade had been the last person seen with her, gave police a lead to pursue. Meanwhile, Diane Ruiz was reported missing by her family and coworkers after she had failed to show up at the Moose Lodge, so police were soon faced with two missing women and no clear connection between them, at least not yet.
The Disney Plus Hulu Max bundle. It's the ultimate bundle for an unbelievable price. Plans starting at $16.99 a month. Get it and watch Marvel Television's Ironheart on Disney Plus.
I want to build something iconic.
A new season of The Bear on Hulu.
We can make people happy.
And The Epic, a Minecraft movie on Max.
Anything you can imagine is possible.
The Disney Plus Hulu Max bundle. Plans starting at $16.99 a month. All these and more now streaming. Terms apply. Visit DisneyPlusHuluMaxBundle.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. Psst, healthcare pros, words out, and it's too good to keep quiet. Look, LinkedIn is revolutionizing job hunting, making it possible to search by specialty, shift preference, and salary. Endless scrolling is out. Whether it's a mental health therapist or dental hygienist, finding the perfect role is faster and easier than ever. Head to linkedin.com/healthcare and start your search today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I was looking for fun ways to tell you that Mint's offer of unlimited premium wireless for $15 a month is back. So I thought it would be fun if we made $15 bills, but it turns out that's very illegal. So there goes my big idea for the commercial. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
While the police were working to put together the pieces, Wade was on the move. After murdering Christine, Wade took her car and headed toward his girlfriend Melissa Montana's workplace in downtown Fort Myers. Still furious over their argument from the night before, Wade confronted Melissa outside of her job. He attacked her in broad daylight, attempting to drag her into the car and beat her violently. But witnesses later described the attack, explaining how Wade choked Melissa, pinned her against the wall by her throat, and punched her in the face so hard that she began to bleed profusely right there in the parking lot. Melissa was fighting for her life but managed to escape, ducking under his arm and locking herself in a nearby room until Wade gave up and left. When police arrived on the scene following the assault, Wade was already gone, driving Christine's stolen black Nissan Versa. Though they didn't know it at the time, they were now dealing with a man who had committed not just one, but two murders, along with a violent assault on his girlfriend.
And a history of bullshit.
Right. So when police arrived at the scene, they found Wade sitting in Christine's stolen car, parked outside of a Joe's Crab Shack, which was just 400 feet from where Melissa worked. So Melissa had like a massage spa, I guess, that she owned. And there's actually police body cam footage of this entire interaction. But Officer McCormick was the first officer to approach him. And he engaged Wade in conversation and asked him to step out of the car. But Wade had no intention of being arrested. Before the officer could even make a move, Wade rolled up the window, turned on the ignition, and sped off. The police, bound by district protocols that prevented them from engaging in high-speed pursuits for nonviolent offenses, were forced to let him go. So Wade's narrow escape that day allowed him just a few more hours of freedom, but the police were now fully aware of who they were dealing with. As they began investigating the assault on Melissa, they also learned that Wade was then the prime suspect in Christine's murder. Soon after, they discovered Diane Ruiz's body in the parking lot, and the case took on an even greater urgency. So at this point, Wade was no longer just a person of interest. He was officially wanted for murder. While Wade was evading capture, he decided to take refuge in a random house. He broke into a house belonging to a retired couple named Fanny and Kent Amlin, who were fortunately out of town at the time, who knows what would have happened if they were at home.
Two more people.
I mean, we know what would have happened.
Yeah.
But Wade made himself comfortable inside their home, eating food from the kitchen, drinking White Claws out of their fridge, taking a shower, and stealing their clothes. He seemed to believe that he could just hide out there long enough to escape the growing manhunt for him. But Wade made a crucial mistake when he called his biological father, Stephen. In a bizarre twist, Wade confessed everything to his father during the phone call. He told Stephen that he had done something that he, quote, couldn't take back, and that two people were now dead because of him. Wade's tone, according to Stephen, was alarmingly calm, almost excited and like proud of himself. Stephen recalled that Wade seemed full of adrenaline as if he were reliving the murders with a sense of thrill. Wade described the murder of Christine, saying, "I choked her out," and admitted that he stayed in her apartment with her body for a while before trying to move her to the trunk of her car, only to abandon the idea when rigor mortis set in. And then he confessed to killing Diane, explaining how he had run her over with Christine's car until her body, quote, "looked like spaghetti," end quote. Now, at first, Stephen didn't believe his son because Wade had a history of exaggeration, often telling tall tales just to get attention. And Stephen wasn't sure if this was another one of those stories. But as Wade continued to describe the details of the murders, Stephen realized his son was telling the truth. Still, even with this knowledge, Stephen found himself conflicted. He knew he had to turn his son in, but struggled with the reality of sending Wade to prison for life, or worse, sentencing him to death. In a moment of clarity, Stephen concocted a plan. He convinced Wade that he would send an Uber to pick him up from wherever he was hiding and bring him to safety. Wade, still trusting his father, gave Stephen his location, the address of the Amblins' home. And while keeping Wade on the phone, Stephen immediately relayed the address to police, giving them the exact coordinates they needed to find him.
Good deal.
Yes. Now, by the time the police arrived at the house, Wade was still inside, oblivious to the fact that his father had just turned him in. And when police surrounded the home, Stephen stayed on the phone with Wade, advising him to walk outside and surrender peacefully. To his credit, Wade listened, walking out of the house without a fight, and he was arrested on the spot. Despite being caught red-handed, Wade initially denied any involvement in the murders. And when questioned about Christine's death, he claimed that she had let him borrow her car because his had run out of gas. He tried to shift blame onto Jason, the man whose house that they had partied at the night before, telling detectives that Jason must have killed Christine after he left. He even offered to take the police to Jason's house to prove his innocence, but detectives were not buying it, especially after hearing Wade's father recount the chilling phone call in which Wade had confessed to both murders. As for Diane, Wade's story was equally weak. He claimed he had given her a ride because she had asked for help and that he dropped her off at a bus stop without incident. He insisted he had nothing to do with her death and couldn't understand why it was such a big deal that both women he had met within a day had ended up dead.
Couldn't understand it, huh?
Yeah. But the police had heard enough. Wade was charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder, along with charges of battery, burglary, and theft. With 2 women brutally murdered within hours of each other, public interest in the case was high, and people were eager to see justice served. Wade's trial, however, wouldn't take place until June of 2024, 5 years after the murders.
That's always so weird to me.
Mm-hmm. In the years leading up to the trial, Wade...
I guess he was in jail at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ones where it's like, oh, they're out free and they're going to get, you know, they're going to get, go to trial in 6 months and they just get to wander the streets. That's weird to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It rarely happens, but it does happen and it is weird. But in the years leading up to the trial, Wade remained in custody, facing numerous charges, including 2 counts of first-degree murder for the deaths of Christine Melton and Diane Ruiz, as well as additional charges for battery, burglary, and grand theft. While in custody, Wade's behavior did not improve. We're all surprised. In fact, he seemed to relish his notoriety. In 2020, while awaiting trial, Wade and his cellmate planned an elaborate escape attempt from prison. The two had arranged for someone to pick them up outside the prison after they escaped through a window. However, the plan was foiled when prison guards were tipped off about the escape. Upon inspecting Wade's cell, guards found that he had tampered with the window frame, removing parts of the metal frame and cracking the security glass. Authorities later said that even if Wade had managed to remove the glass entirely, it would have been impossible for him to fit through the window. But as a result, Wade was charged with an attempted escape and criminal mischief, adding even more time to his potential sentence. And Wade's time in prison also saw a disturbing transformation in his appearance. He joined a white supremacist gang known as the Unforgiven. And this is a gang that's primarily based in Florida. And as part of his initiation into the gang, he received numerous tattoos, many of which were overtly racist symbols. His face, neck, and arms became a canvas for hate-filled imagery, including swastikas and the word words, "Why so serious?" which is a nod to the Joker, the fictional villain. And these tattoos, which covered his face and gave him a very menacing appearance, became a point of concern for his defense team when it came time for the trial. And his attorney even considered asking Wade to cover up the tattoos with makeup in court, hoping to avoid the jury forming immediate negative impressions of him. But ultimately, they chose to argue that the tattoos were a reflection of Wade's mental state rather than a cause for his actions. So I want you to Google Wade Wilson and look at what this person looks like, okay? Because he's got tattoos all over his face, but he's also got this smile that creeps up his cheek.
Oh, my.
And there's this one clip of his defense attorney sitting next to him. And it is funny because the defense attorney is like this older guy, and he looks over at him, and you can tell he's just studying the tattoos on Wade's face. And then he just kind of looks away and shakes his head. Like, what
he's interesting. The first thing that comes up is Jelly Roll's wife, Bunny XO, says convicted murderer Wade Wilson gave out her number to random people.
Okay, so we can talk about that at the end. Okay. I do know what this is about, but okay. We can talk about that at the end. But what do you think about this guy's appearance?
Oh, I mean, it's interesting because I was expecting like a real thug looking dude with tattoos all over him and like rough, like, you know, I was expecting that. But he almost looks like this, like his hair is ridiculously greased and slicked back. And like, he's almost like clean cut with like a ton of facial tattoos. Mm-hmm. So he's.
Show me which picture you were referring to, too. Because when he was like during his trial, he came to the trial in a suit every day. But a lot of the time, the suit would be these bold colors. And yes, his hair would be slicked back. The sides of his head would be shaved. So he was definitely. Yeah. So he was definitely going for a look. I don't know what the look was, but it's definitely a mixture of like trying to be clean cut, but also trying to look like a menace.
He's got a swastika under his eye. Mm-hmm. His hairline by his ear and eye says glory.
Yeah. Which also has some sort of meaning apparently like within the prison system.
I bet that's a cute meaning. The other side said, "Why so serious? Ha ha ha." Man. Yeah. He's a creepy. I mean, like if you saw him.
But look at the pictures of him before he went into prison. Because if you look up Wade Wilson before tattoos, he actually is an attractive guy. And so we're going to get into all the stuff about, okay, not that one. That's not a good bit. It's like a mugshot. But there are pictures of him smiling. He has nice teeth. Like he looks.
So did he get all these tattoos in prison?
Yes. But before he got into all this trouble, like he wasn't a bad looking guy.
Interesting.
But anyway, we're going to dive into all of that too, because trust
Kelly,
me,
your celebrity crush for a long time was Colson Baker, Machine Gun Kelly.
I can't do
so,
this right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. You take that. Everybody take that with a grain of salt when she says he was a good looking guy.
Okay. We're just going to move on. Okay. I'm married to you now. Clearly I have changed my ways.
Continue.
So Wade's trial began on June 1st of 2024 with jury selection. And from the outset, the defense's strategy was clear. They were going to try to argue that Wade's actions weren't premeditated and that his mental state, fueled by years of drug use and multiple concussions, played a significant role in the crimes. Wade's defense attorney, recognizing that arguing for an insanity plea would be a long shot, focused instead on the idea that his brain injuries and substance abuse had left him out of his mind when the murders occurred. Now, the defense brought in a neurologist who testified that Wade had suffered several traumatic brain injuries during his high school years, which could have impacted his judgment and impulse control.
And given him the CTE, yes.
Sure. According to the neurologist, the combination of concussions and long-term drug use may have led to Wade's erratic and violent behavior. And he argued that Wade didn't plan the murders of Christine and Diane and instead acted impulsively, driven by a diseased mind. However, the prosecution was prepared for this argument, and they countered with their own medical expert, who testified that while Wade had indeed suffered concussions, they weren't severe enough to cause the type of behavior he exhibited. The prosecution argued that Wade's violent tendencies were more likely the result of his escalating drug use and history of aggression rather than any brain injury. Moreover, they pointed out that Wade's pattern of behavior with these repeated violent acts, coupled with attempts to manipulate other people, showed clear signs of premeditation. The murders of Christine Melton and Diane Ruiz, the prosecution argued, were not impulsive but deliberate acts of violence. Throughout the trial, witness testimony painted a grim picture of Wade's life and actions leading up to the murders. Stephanie Johnson, Christine's best friend, took the stand and gave a harrowing account of the night that they met. She recounted how Wade had introduced himself as JR and how he charmed Christine and how the group went back to Jason's house to continue the party. Stephanie described her last moments with Christine, explaining that Christine had seemed completely at ease with Wade and had no fear of being left alone with him. And hearing this description makes me think of Ted Bundy, because Ted Bundy was a charming and likable guy who easily made women feel comfortable in his presence until they weren't. And I feel like he is the exact same type of sociopath that Ted Bundy was. The prosecution also introduced testimony from Wade's father, Stephen, who recounted the chilling phone calls that he received from Wade on the day of the murders. Stephen told the jury, in front of Wade, how Wade had casually confessed to killing two people, describing the murders in graphic detail with a shocking lack of remorse. This testimony, combined with physical evidence and witness accounts, painted a very clear picture of Wade's guilt. I commend his biological father for getting on the stand and saying all of this in front of Wade, his biological son. Like, I can only imagine how hard that was for Stephen, feeling like, man, I have failed this kid so many times. So, like, my heart, the compassionate side of my heart does go out to him. But at the same time, spare Wade nothing. He deserves to rot.
Mm-hmm. But props to him. I agree. Props to him, because that would be really tough.
Yeah, of course it would. I mean, if it was my own child, I would do the same thing, but it wouldn't be easy.
Right.
So the trial lasted only 2 full days. That just shocks me. 2 days is all it took for this trial. Like, just for reference, the Delphi murders trial just wrapped up, and that lasted like 4 or 5 weeks. So the fact that they were able to get this done in 2 days was wild. But on June 12th of 2024, after just 90 minutes of deliberation, the jury returned with their verdict. Wade Wilson was found guilty on all counts, including 2 counts of first-degree murder, battery, burglary, and theft. But the trial wasn't over yet. With Wade convicted, the jury now had to decide his fate. Under Florida law, a death sentence requires a recommendation from at least 8 out of 12 jurors. The prosecution convinced that Wade's actions were cold, calculated, and deserving of the ultimate punishment, pushed really hard for the death penalty. During the sentencing phase, the defense once again argued that Wade's mental health issues and drug use should be taken into account, and they pleaded for mercy, asking the jury to sentence Wade to life in prison without the possibility of parole instead of death. Wade's attorney argued that Wade's actions, while horrific, were the result of a broken mind, one that had been shaped by years of untreated mental health issues, substance abuse, and trauma.
I just gotta say, back to what I've always said, being an attorney, how can you be an attorney, know that they did it, and be up there saying, well, let's go easy on him because he did use drugs?
Yeah, like, let's show him mercy, even though he showed absolutely nobody
else
mercy.
None to anyone else. And the drugs aren't a mental thing. He chose to do the drugs. Like, I don't know. It's just crazy.
I know. I will never understand it either. If I ever would have gone into law, I wouldn't have been able to be a criminal defense attorney. There's no, I just don't have it in me, I guess. But the jury, however, was not swayed by any of it. And on June 25th, they recommended the death penalty for Wade Wilson. 9 out of the 12 jurors voted in favor of death, which was more than enough to meet the legal requirement in Florida. Now, finally, on August 27th, Wade Wilson was formally sentenced to death. In addition to his death sentence, he was also given life sentences for the murders and additional time for burglary, battery, and theft charges. So Wade's defense team tried to appeal the decision, arguing that the state had not sufficiently proven that Wade had premeditated the murders, but the judge denied their request for a new trial. So Wade Wilson, now 30 years old, was transferred to the Union Correctional Institution in Rayford, Florida, where he will remain on death row until his execution. Despite the appeals, Wade's fate seems sealed. His violent life finally caught up with him, and the justice system that had failed to hold him accountable for so long delivered its final judgment.
Way too late, but good.
Yeah. But what I have found particularly disturbing about this case is the romanticization that some members of the public developed around Wade Wilson. Because of his tattoos, appearance, and the media attention, there were people who inexplicably found him attractive despite knowing the heinous nature of his crimes. And this is not an uncommon phenomenon in high-profile criminal cases. We've seen it with Ted Bundy. We've seen it with the Menendez brothers, even Scott Peterson. But it serves as a stark reminder of the strange and often unhealthy fascination that society can have with violent criminals. It's crucial to remember that behind these sensational headlines and court drama are real human victims whose lives were cut short. So when I was on, I'm pretty big on TikTok. Like when I say big on, I'm often on it is what I mean. But for a while, it seemed like my For You page was all about Wade Wilson. And it would be these clips of this. He's pretty tall. He's like 6'4". Strolling into the courtroom with this like super arrogant swagger about him. He'd have his chin up high and just this like smirk on his face.
Confident swag.
Yes. And people were playing these clips of him walking into the courtroom with music in the background that was meant to evoke this like, you know, attraction.
Sexual tension or something.
Yes. Yeah. And it was like all you would see. And then in the comments, it would be like, so we all need therapy, huh? Like, and I mean, the comments are almost even worse because everyone's like falling for it. Mm-hmm. And so on the one hand, like I can see how if you take away these violent crimes, yeah, he used to be attractive before he got his teeth kicked in prison. And now he's missing half his teeth, including all of these tattoos that he has on his face. Like maybe prior to all of that, he could have been seen as an attractive guy. But now that you know this, and now that his half his teeth are missing because he was obviously attacked in prison, it's just like, how do you not set that aside? I don't know. It's very fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I do agree.
Yeah. But for Christine and Diane's families, the sentencing of Wade Wilson did bring a sense of justice, but no amount of legal retribution can truly fill the void left by their loss. Christine's family described her as the glue that held them together, a bright, adventurous spirit who brought joy and laughter into every room. Diane's children were left without their mother, and her coworkers at the Moose Lodge still remember her as the heartbeat of their establishment, always ready with a smile and a helping hand. Now, I do want to touch, since we mentioned on
Jelly Roll's wife.
Yes. Okay, so Bunny XO, or whatever her name is, she's Jelly Roll's wife, right? They're married?
Or my ex-wife or something. I don't know, some association.
They're together. But she has a podcast, and so I think it's called Dumb Blonde. I've never listened to it, but I am aware of what happened with all this. So for a minute, she touched on the whole, like, oh, everyone finds this guy hot. Like, some people think he's a monster, and some people think he's really hot, and I think it'd be super cool to get him on the podcast to tell his story. Well, she said that, or something like that, and caught a lot of flack for it. And so then she kind of switched her tune and realized, like, okay, yeah, I don't want to be a part of the people who are fetishizing this murderer. Mm-hmm. And instead wanted to talk to people about his story just to, like, get the information about it, but not really glorify him. And I guess as retribution, he released her phone number. Because I think they were actually supposed to talk at one point.
So she was, like, going to get him on the podcast.
Yes. She literally was, like, it was
from
on her
prison?
Podcast. Yes, he was going to call from prison and, like, have a whole conversation with her.
That's wild.
Which there's also, since everything had come out, there's been jailhouse phone calls that have been recorded and released of Wade Wilson talking to his multiple romantic partners, including one that is a dude. And he's talking about, oh, when I get out, we're going to get married. And it's just interesting, though, if you listen to these phone calls, because the one common theme is that he is fluffing them all up and then always, always asks about money. Like, are you able to send me money? Are you able to mm-hmm. get there? If you don't get here soon, it's not going to be able to get into my account by Monday. So you need to walk here and I'll be on the phone with you while you walk here. Like, he's encouraging women to just, like, walk alone in the middle of the night so that he can get money. He does not give a shit about anybody.
How do any of them fall for it?
Because they're desperate, because they have no sense of self-worth, because they have daddy issues and they're starving for male attention. I don't know, but it is very, very bizarre.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And embarrassing.
Yes, agreed.
Embarrassing behavior. but I don't get it. I'm fascinated by it. I'm judging. I don't even care. I'm sitting here and I'm judging you. If you're reaching out to Wade Wilson in hopes of having a relationship with him, you need therapy. You need to put that money not on Wade Wilson's books, but into BetterHelp. And this isn't even an ad for BetterHelp, but sponsor me. That's it. That's all I have.
Freaking nutty bag.
Nutty case. I'll put some videos and media on my Instagram, mama.mysterypodcast. If you've made it this far, thank you for sticking with us. I really appreciate you supporting the podcast.
We love you.
Yes. Like, share, comment, review, do whatever you do to get the word out about Mama Mystery, because you love us and we love you.
Mama Mystery out.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. You chose to hit play on this podcast today. Smart choice. Make another smart choice with AutoQuote Explorer to compare rates from multiple car insurance companies all at once. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance and Affiliates. Not available in all states and situations. Prices may vary on how you buy.